Welcome to the Master Your Health podcast. My name's Amanda Rocchio, previously Amanda Meixner, and I'm here today with my co-host, the research junkie between the two of us, and my husband, Chris.
Hello, everyone.
This is our second week as husband and wife. I guess first time recording a podcast as first husband podcast and wife. The wedding was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
We got married on the beach in San Diego, and the reception was on the boat. And let me tell you, Chris can bust out a move or two. He may look super muscular. Well, he is, but he can definitely break it down on the dance floor, not just at the gym.
I'm definitely in my element at the reception, for sure.
My friends were definitely like, whoa, I didn't know he had moves like that.
Yeah, and Amanda obviously looked amazing in her dress. I was actually really scared about the makeup. I'm not a huge makeup person, and obviously for those photos, they cake that makeup on. So I was like, make sure it doesn't look weird. And I was pleasantly surprised. I loved it. So she looked beautiful, and you guys should have seen it. I loved it.
That was really fun. I got multiple text messages being like, can you please tell the makeup artist to make sure you don't look like geisha? Like like super pale, you know, like just too much over the top. And I did. I told the makeup artist. I said, can you please? I'm pretty tan now too. Don't make me too pale.
Yeah.
And I'm glad it worked out. I'm glad you liked it.
Oh, me too.
And you guys would have loved our cake topper too. It was Chris. He had a barbell, overhead barbell press, and I was laying across it in the wedding dress. That was our cake topper.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen any of the photos, you can look on my Instagram at meowmix, meow, M-E-I-X. I have it in my save story highlights, a bunch of the wedding stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Chris all dressed up in a tux. The only time you won't see him in t-shirt and shorts.
That's
or
right.
Pants.
Although I did like being in a suit, so there might have to be a little bit more of that
in my life.
You just
bust out a suit while we record. He's just recording a podcast in the suit casually.
It's my new thing.
Your new thing. Yeah. Well, we're happy to be back here, and we want to get into today's episode. But before we do, Chris is going to read a review from one of our listeners.
Yeah, this is Carla B, and she writes a 5-star review titled Favorite New Health Podcast. Amanda and Chris have a great approach to health as a whole. They do their research and share their knowledge in a way that is practical and easy to follow. I also love how they focus on giving intuitive, progressive advice while also being conscious that everyone is different and there is no one-size-fits-all approach. On top of that, they present a great picture of what a healthy adult relationship looks like. I'm loving the podcast so far. Keep it up. Look at that. We're setting examples.
Oh, for that was the sweetest review. Thank you so much. And you guys have time right now to go ahead and leave us a review. That would mean so much to Chris and I. It could be our little honeymoon present.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Getting into today's episode, we're chatting with one of my new friends, Dr. Christian Gonzalez, better known as Dr. G, because he is a G in his field when it comes to naturopathic and functional medicine. He specifically specializes in oncology, environmental medicine, and helping breast cancer patients. He's worked with thousands of patients, teaching them the fundamentals to living a better life. Understanding nutrition is one of the pillars of health. Dr. G is constantly preaching the importance of diet in healing and performance. When I met him, I knew we clicked right away. His passion for medicine and helping others is very inspiring and motivating in my eyes. Today specifically, we got into his tips and research on breast cancer and breast cancer prevention. I'm curious what you thought of today's episode, Chris.
I really liked it. And what I really like about his message are that all these preventative measures that he talks about are things that you can implement to help overall health, not just specifically addressing breast cancer or prostate cancer. So they're things that can reduce your risk for cardiovascular disease, for instance. So he breaks it all down. He's got the research for you. So I really think you guys are going to love it.
He really brings the fire in today's episode, and we can't wait to hear what you guys think. So let's get into it.
Yep.
And I'd like to welcome to the podcast, Dr. G.
Hi. Hi. Thank you for having me. What a pleasure. What an honor to be on this podcast.
Thanks
What's
for
up,
coming
man?
Over.
Yeah.
Can't wait to dive right in. So I wanted to ask you, what drove you into the medical field? You know, why? How'd you end up there? Why are you so passionate about it?
Yeah, man, that's a great question. Being in school, I know that there was an underlying need to help or service others in whatever capacity it may be. So initially it was going into orthodontics because I had some really bad teeth as a kid. They were all crooked and it was a mess. I know how it can affect someone's confidence when they're young. So where life was taking me was in a work where I can help kids with their teeth. But then I found out about naturopathic medicine and in dental school. And life changed completely. Simultaneously, my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer. So I started learning and becoming dismayed with how breast cancer is being treated conventionally. So sort of like the stars align in life. Sometimes you have these major alignments and you just have an intuition to follow it. And I was like, it was palpable. I was like, I have to leave dental school and I have to learn more about this naturopathic field. So then going into that, that's when like the snowball started and the fire started trailblazing. And then from that point on, it was just literally one thing on top of another, being able to help people, learning more, learning about the root causes of disease, how we can prevent breast cancer, which has become a passion of mine, because there's a lot of women who are, one, predisposed and will develop it at a certain point. The estimates are now, when I'm old and we're all old here, 1 in 3 women with a cancer. But breast cancer right now, it's 1 in 8.
Wow.
So,
and that's developing, not necessarily. Developing. Yeah, so it's like...
Not necessarily dying from, right. But we have...
But it's like 1 in 39 for deaths, right?
In a certain age. Yeah, so we have 41,000 people are going to die this year of breast cancer.
Wow.
And there's 3.1 million women walking around the United States who've had a history of breast cancer.
That's crazy.
It's real. It's a second leading cause of death, aside from lung cancer, for women. Mm-hmm. It's a second leading, and it's going to be the number one cancer. So the crazy thing is, only 5 to 10% of cancers are really, really tied into the genetics, but we have so much power to make changes. So sort of that's why, again, on these shows and these podcasts, is to instill what largely is these followings of women, right? Because women tend to be really, not in this dynamic, but women tend to be really the people who are into health and want to get their boyfriends or husbands who are not really into health and, you know, bring them into it. But teaching these women how to prevent breast cancer, because it's very much so possible.
Yeah, I love that you empower women to kind of take this risk factor into their own hands. So, I mean, getting right into that, what are some of the things you can do to prevent it?
So much. We have to start over here with you two, because I know that you both are huge on diet and exercise. And believe it or not, diet and exercise play a huge role. Diet can influence about 35% of preventing cancer. Just diet, and especially Let me go back. The exercise can prevent 35%. And that's just literally exercising. Most of the data is on breast and colon cancer. So obesity, when you're at an obese level, you have a 30% increased risk in breast cancer.
Wow.
Obesity.
Wow.
Right? Because what happens is, when we have those adipose cells, what they're doing is they're releasing hormones into the body, elevating estrogen in our body, elevating inflammatory proteins in our body, basically creating a soup that is pro-cancer, pro-estrogenic.
Yes.
So really important is the data that we're now seeing on exercise is so intriguing, because there's so much behind breast cancer, and I said colon. But for breasts, what we see is we have to have a mix of aerobic and anaerobic activity, sort of what I know your regimen is like that.
It's, yes.
So really instilling in women that not to be afraid to pick up weights.
Yes.
Because that balance of muscle to fat is huge, especially in preventing breast cancer. And also, what was found is that vigorous exercise was more effective than moderate exercise.
Oh, Chris, you're doing it right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
His intensity in the gym.
That's what I've been telling you.
Yeah, he's got insane intensity.
Yeah.
But even what you do at the gym over here,
yes.
Like, that's good intensity. Like you gotta do hard exercise. But really just getting people to move is the most important, because sedentary is a recipe for breast cancer.
Right. No, that makes so much sense. And so when you looked at the studies, did you see it was mostly like the benefits of exercise, or is it also linked to being overweight, or is it a little bit of like, is it
both.
Hard to tell?
Okay. Certainly both, because the obesity is a huge issue, because I mentioned the adipose cells and how it affects your hormones. But the exercise has effects on insulin levels, and insulin is huge, right? Insulin sensitivity, insulin pathways, inflammation, detoxification, hormone balance, immune balance. These are all things that are that's pro overall health, right? They're going to be preventing cancer. So the exercise is, for me, what I always say is, if I can get the benefits of exercise, put it in a capsule and sell it to people, I'd be a billionaire, because the efficacy of exercise for preventing cancers is that of the highest level, you know, pharmaceuticals. It's pretty incredible. So all it takes is us making time to get outside and move. Mm-hmm. And it can be life changing for people. So I said 35% when you couple exercise with a proper diet. So what they found was diets that are more plant heavy, like what you talk about, really having an abundance of colored plants, lots of fiber, and or around the Mediterranean, it was highly studied too, are both very preventative for breast cancer. You want to have variety. And this is what we talked on my show, Amanda, is the different colors of the rainbow, because each has a different profile that is protective, right? Some help detox hormones, some are antioxidants, some protect DNA. It's beautiful stuff, the intelligence of what the universe gave us. But what we do is we just, you know, eat a standard American diet, which is devoid of all these nutrients.
But I thought the rainbow was Skittles.
I know, the rainbow was Skittles.
That's what I always say. You don't want to taste the rainbow. You want to eat the rainbow. Yeah.
Exactly, exactly. But things like berries and cruciferous vegetables, even spices. We don't even use spices the way we used to, but things like turmeric, ginger, and rosemary were shown to be, in different studies, protective for breast cancer. Amazing stuff, but like, just instilling these practices, changing our diet, working out more, addressing insulin sensitivity, which is major, and I can talk about that later. Mm-hmm. Huge things that we can do. It's in our hands. Remember I said 5-10% genetically based? Mm-hmm. The other 90%, like, we have the power to do things.
Right. You know? Right. Give yourself a leg up by walking out the door for a little.
Yeah. So lifestyle is about 30% influence on breast cancer.
Okay.
And I mentioned exercise and diet together is about 35%.
Wow.
There you go. 65% just on basic stuff. Add in the other stuff that we do. We have so much more control than we ever thought.
Yes. So things like smoking and mm-hmm. reducing your alcohol consumption as well are mm-hmm. also risk factors, aren't they?
Yeah. And now for breast cancer, before this year, it was believed that, and this may be good news for other people, but for me, I'm still very conservative because, until this year, it's sort of in the dark more so that when you consume alcohol, we thought, you know, three drinks or so, because the earlier studies say about there's a 30% increase in women who drink three drinks a day. That's a lot still. Mm-hmm. Not many people are drinking three drinks a day.
Right.
But some women do come home, believe it or not, and drink three glasses of wine every day. There's a 30% increase. But now the studies that came say it was more inconclusive. Regardless what alcohol does, I don't care if it's white wine, red wine, beer, liquor, it affects your pathways of detoxifying hormones. Mm-hmm. And most cancers are going to be estrogen driven, right? So when you're consuming alcohol regularly, doesn't matter if it's low sugar or anything. I mean, great. You know, this is what Carrie Jones came on the show and she's like the hormone guru, was talking about this. It doesn't matter the type of alcohol, it will still have the same effect. It'll metabolize the same way and it's going to disrupt hormones, because what happens is it overcompetes for detoxification of estrogen. It's either alcohol or estrogen a lot of the time. She likened it to a bathtub filled with alcohol and water's estrogen. Usually that alcohol is going to come out of the drain before the estrogen. You don't want that estrogen to build up. Mm-hmm. So I always tell people, just be really intentional about the alcohol you drink. You know, don't be loose with it. Like, oh, it's a Tuesday and I'm going to watch this show on Netflix, but on Thursday I'm going to finish another bottle. Instead, you know, be more intentional, celebrate with it, you know, pick yes. and choose the times you do it.
Yes.
So like, we were talking about diet and weight being an issue. Well, alcohol also has that factor with metabolically as well, mm-hmm. with prioritizing metabolizing the alcohol mm-hmm. before it even touches the food in your stomach too.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
So it's covering that pathway on multiple different fronts in terms yeah. of prioritizing.
Exactly.
No, but I like you saying that it's, you don't have to be perfect, but just don't make it a thing. I mean, you brought us a bottle of lovely wine to celebrate our marriage.
Organic mm-hmm. biodynamic.
Yeah, and we're going to use, you know, we're not drinking that every night. We're saving that for a special occasion.
I'm drinking a couple of fingers tonight.
Yeah, just be intentional, because yes. I'm not here to be on one side and dogmatic and saying, you have to exercise like this every single day. You have to eat like this every single day, because I understand the human, how we are, human condition, human. Mm-hmm. We're so complex. But don't make it part of your ritual that you need to depend on, because mm-hmm. it's not a good ritual to depend on. A good ritual is exercising and moving around.
You know? Absolutely.
If you want to drink alcohol, instead go for a walk or do some breathing or do some meditation.
So what are some like better, obviously like water is better, but I think I've heard you talking about also how green tea and stuff has been shown to have some positive effects on cancer, mm-hmm. just general lifestyle. So I'm curious, like what other drinks would you suggest?
Yeah, huge. Green tea is one of the huge anti-cancer therapeutics out there, because it's a DNA protectant, right? It's a major antioxidant. So actually folks can drink green tea, as many as cups as they can. I really tell people, some of the studies say like 9 cups a day. Some people can't do that. Mm-hmm. So, there's also matcha tea, which is a little more concentrated, but matcha tea, some people are sensitive to. But the thing with green tea is a lot of people aren't affected by the caffeine they are the way, like say with coffee, with the same amount of caffeine, because green tea has something called L-theanine, which helps balance it out, mm-hmm. and it's more calming to the brain. So for me, I'm never affected by the caffeine in green tea, but some folks are because they can't metabolize it as well. But still, just again, be intentional. See how you are with 2 cups of green tea, high quality, organic. Watch out for those crappy green tea bags, like, you know, the Lipton ones that are out there. I did a whole review on teas and how to look for them, but that's really important. But I like for matcha tea, and I'm not affiliated, is Pique, P-I-Q-U-E, because it's quadruple tested for heavy metals.
Nice.
It's expensive, but it's, you have to think of it like a medicine and less a food, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it like as anti-cancer medicine that you're doing every single day, then the value goes up. Rather than
now, I just got a green light to drink all the green tea I want. I think you're sipping on some right now, Chris.
Absolutely.
Ready to go?
I'm going to sip right now.
I know, like, coffee really hits you strong, but green tea, I could definitely have a couple cups of those a day. But matcha is a bit stronger, obviously, because it's concentrated. So you just have to find the right mix because it's a little bitter and you don't want to go overload on the sweeteners, obviously.
It is. Right. What you can do is just even like make a few cups of green tea and just fill up like a big mason jar and then drink it at some point in the day. You can have it throughout the day, but just know that it's breast protective. It's one of my favorite things because it's easy for most people who like it.
Yes. Love it. Totally.
So I wanted to circle back and talk about, because you talked about the connection with estrogen. And so maybe talking about the hormonal component of developing breast cancer and also how it also feeds into tumor growth once it's already developed.
Yeah, that this is the most important, one of the most important concepts in breast cancer, is to understand that our hormones are intimately tied with the driving of the major cancers. For us fellas, it's prostate cancer. And for mostly women, some men, is breast cancer. And what happens is, when you have estrogen in the body, it's broken down into 3 different pathways, right? The 2, the 4, and the 16. The 4-hydroxy pathway is the one that can cause the most DNA damage. It's the one that I'm most concerned about when I do dried urine tests, the Dutch test for women, either if they have a history of cancer, family history of cancer, they just want to prevent. You have to see how the ratios of how your hormones are breaking down. It's so important. I think every man and woman should do this test yearly. So you want to make sure that it's going down the 2 pathway, and it's metabolized, methylated, and it becomes water soluble. When it's water soluble, it's not going to affect your DNA, and that's beautiful. That's what we want. The beautiful thing is that we can manipulate the pathway that it's taking or what it's choosing for by food and supplements. Right? Like that's where cruciferous vegetables come in, because they actually redirect that pathway into that healthy metabolizing pathway of the 2. So broccoli sprouts, Amanda, you were just showing me the broccoli sprouts that you can start growing. So important. Every woman with a family history or a history of breast cancer should be having, especially if it's hormonal breast cancer, should be having broccoli sprouts every single day, just a handful or whatever, some cruciferous vegetables for sure. But also like artichokes, beets, citrus fruits, having those every single day is going to help redirect that pathway. Once you're down that pathway, you want to make sure you're methylating it well. What's really helpful for that is something like magnesium. So what I recommend also is Epsom salt baths. That's a great way for transdermal magnesium to get into the body and start pushing that pathway. And then lastly, you have to be pooping. Otherwise, if you're not pooping and your gut microbiome is a mess, it's called the estrobilome. If once it gets to your colon and those pathogenic bacteria are basically, what happens is when you have hormones, they're either wrapped up and then you poop them out and they're fine, or they're unwrapped by this enzyme and then they're released back into the body. So a huge part of preventing breast cancer is making sure you're pooping every single day and your gut is healthy. That's sort of like the pathway that happens when we talk about hormonal breast cancer and how to prevent it. You have to make sure that all 3 stages are lined up correctly.
Yeah, it's kind of the common denominator in most of our podcasts. It seems like gut health is just so, so important for so many different things, whether you're talking about skin health, mental health, you know, brain neurotransmitter development, you know, hormonal health. It just seems like just the panacea, you know, of just the one thing that you should be focused on. If you're going to focus on anything, that should be in your a top priority.
We're more microbial than we are cellular.
Mm-hmm.
So
most people can't believe that when you tell them.
That's such a crazy concept.
Yeah,
even to think that like our skin has a microbiome, like all like everywhere.
Everywhere. So and in school I remember they were like, listen, you're gonna do all these tests and sometimes you may be at a loss. When you're at a loss, just treat the gut, just treat the gut. Mm-hmm. And so many times you'll see improvement. Unfortunately, a lot of our food system, a lot of things in our food affect our digestive health, right? That's why I'm huge on pesticides, because they have a direct relation to what happens is when you're eating these pesticides, they're affecting your gut microbiome every single time.
But Dr. G, there's no study showing that pesticides are harmful to you. Yeah, didn't you know that?
Yeah, I don't go to my Instagram.
Right.
Yeah, and that's where I start. That's where I talk about things like glyphosate, right? Because glyphosate, and one of the main reasons why it came out to the public and shown to be safe is because it doesn't affect cellular health or cells the way they do bacteria, mm-hmm. right? Bacteria have this very specific pathway called the Shikimate pathway. The Shikimate pathway, what happens when glyphosate comes into contact with these bacteria, it affects that pathway. The way they metabolize changes, they die, it affects our gut microbiome. That's why I always say, be aware of, if you can't buy all organic food, go to the Clean 15, go to the Dirty Dozen, just buy the foods that are needed. Like in that Dirty Dozen, you know, like if you're getting berries, just go for organic berries. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Just, I don't like overwhelming people, especially when they're really needing to make a change. Like they never heard of this. They're on a budget and this and that, but there are ways to do things to improve it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, 'cause you talked about, you know, having the genetic predisposition for breast cancer and taking the approaches that could reduce the risk, you know? And so, people can, you know, take a genome test mm-hmm. and identify and see if they have those genes, because they've already identified them in the literature. You can mm-hmm. look them up.
Yeah.
Same thing with prostate cancer. They've identified the inherited bad genes essentially that are responsible for it. So if you, you know, do a genetic test and see if you have those and take the appropriate steps to prevent these things.
Yeah, 100%. And if those genes come up for you, remember what I said, it's only 5-10% determined by that. The rest is epigenetic, the way that you influence your genetics, mm-hmm. right? Through lifestyle, through food, through consumer choices, exercise, all of these things have the power to change, right? Those mm-hmm. genes are, they morph, right? They respond to their environment that we give it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're powerful.
Well, you were talking about small changes, and I was listening to a podcast with Rhonda Patrick. I love Rhonda Patrick's mm-hmm. stuff. And mm-hmm. she had this Dr. Ruth Patterson on, and they were talking about, you know, obviously there's all these factors such as changing your diet, not just what you eat, but when you eat, things like that. Yeah. And, you know, increasing exercise, all these other things, but they actually did a separate study where they didn't change what the people ate. They just changed the times at which they ate them. So it was a 13-hour fast, and that was able to reduce the risk by 36% or something like that.
That's great, because you're literally just making the checkoffs on the list that are things that are brought that I want to talk about.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm cutting you off.
No, that's amazing. That's because now you're going into inflammation, insulin, fasting, right? So when I read the 13-hour study, was in my residency, and after that I basically tell almost every woman and man that we need some time between our last meal and our first meal. So what you want to do is make sure you have at least 13 hours between your dinner and your breakfast, but you also want to make sure that your dinner is not huge, right? Mm-hmm. What happens is with that study, they also had a smaller dinner and then the 13 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So what it was is basically that there was a significant increase in death from breast cancer for folks who had who ate less than 13 hours, which is pretty crazy. And when you're fasting, it decreases your blood sugar. So each additional hour that you fasted had an 8% decrease in CRP, which is the overall inflammatory. It's basically just generalized inflammation in the body, C-reactive protein,
okay,
which is interesting. So let's say you're at 13 hours, you went to 14 hours, you reduce your CRP by 8%, which is pretty significant.
Mm-hmm.
But I did a whole show on fasting to talk about this, that we are genetically equipped to not eat as well. Yes. Just as we are genetically equipped to eat, we are to not eat because evolutionarily we didn't have all this abundance of food. So I think it's a good practice for us to at least take that time between dinner and breakfast, but it's also good practice for us to pick out a day and just go, all right, you know, I'm gonna not eat today, mm-hmm. you know, and cause these stress hormones, these hormetic stress hormones to, or and the genes to turn on mm-hmm. that evolutionary knowledge and intelligence within us to turn on, you know, for our benefit, reduce inflammation, as talking about this one, reducing blood sugar. It's amazing stuff.
You also have autophagy and things like
that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the beautiful thing is, Walter Longo came out with the fasting mimicking diet, and you can essentially eat during a fast, and it's a 5-day fast. And you're eating foods that don't necessarily spike up your blood sugar, very specific foods. It's still difficult. You know, I did a 3-day no eating and I was like, ooh, this is pretty hard. But it's also imperative. I say at least once every quarter, right? You just want to do it every 3 months.
Do a 3-day?
Do a 3 or 5 day.
Three or five day.
I think we need to work our way up to doing
I need to work up
day.
To 12 hours.
I know. I can imagine how much you eat.
Well, he's,
I eat constantly.
Like, I mean, I kind of, like, I have a good amount of space between dinner and breakfast. I'd still like to try maybe, like, a 1-day fast.
Yeah.
And obviously, anyone who's underweight, I wouldn't recommend doing this. But I know him and I have been talking about trying it more because he's so used to eating so much because he's trying to put on muscle, like, almost all the time. He has a very fast metabolism. Lots of excuses.
Yeah, I can imagine. Exactly. But again, you mentioned something important. If you're underweight or if you have thyroid issues or adrenal issues, you have to ask your practitioner if this is safe for you. Mm-hmm. I recommend it for the general healthy public who's not dealing with any issues. But I mean, it's worth just doing half a day at least for you. Just to remember, evolutionarily, like, this is a very familiar time. It may not feel good mentally. But those days that you're on your off day, you know, and you're not going to lose muscle. Walter Longo was doing studies that shows you it's a reduction in the mass seemingly, but once you refeed, it goes back.
I noticed that. So, you know, I'm not as afraid as I used to in terms of, used to be in terms of losing muscle mass. But, I mean, I've done the 16-hour fast too, whenever I had the broken leg and the torn ACL and I was trying to do that, rehab that, But yeah, it's difficult. And so I recommend, at least that's what I'm trying to do, is I'm starting with the 12-hour and that's seeming to work. I'm not very consistent with it, but I have pulled it off, and then moving up to the 16 and then eventually getting to the 24-hour. And then, but with these fasts that you're talking about, is it okay to drink caffeine? Because I know sometimes the health community is kind of on the fence as to whether or not the coffee breaks your fast, because obviously it's metabolized by the liver. The liver releases metabolites and those metabolites get released into the bloodstream. And so people say it does reset the clock, but it's just determines whether or not you're talking about the metabolic clock or the cellular metabolism.
Yeah. You know what? Like, I'm a purist, man. I say stick to the water.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. I drank like 2 gallons of water when I did it, and that's it. Yeah. But again, you can do the fasting mimicking diet by Walter Longo and you'll have access to food. Mm-hmm. It's just, you're going to be hungry. You know, it's like it's like olives, you know, some bar, but, it's worth a try or working up to it, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's certainly, when I say it's not for everyone, I don't mean it like that. It's not for everyone people who have adrenal issues, thyroid issues, weight, but it's evolutionarily for everyone because it's very familiar, you know, so it's worth a try.
So what about, in terms of other risk factors, like does obesity increase your chance for breast cancer or sedentary lifestyle, things like that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. We were talking about that before. There's a 30% increase with breast cancer.
Oh,
it's
it is
crazy because you think about the adipose cells are releasing hormones, right? Upregulating the estrogen in our body. And inflammatory proteins, right? So then that pro-inflammatory state is basically like the boiling pot where we're throwing all of the other factors. Mm-hmm. When you're in that pro-inflammatory state, then you're eating like crap, right? Or, which came first, the chicken or the egg, you're eating like crap, the way stress affects you is worse, lifestyle stuff. That whole state is the melting pot. That's what the word's brewing in there. That's where you gotta get out of that state first. And then start giving your body what it needs to heal. And that brings me to sleep. Like, sleep is so important. And we were just talking about fasting, you know, and having that sleep in between. But I always talk about the effect of ambient light coming in. There was a study that showed that night light or street light coming in does affect the way, increase the risk of breast cancer because of melatonin, right?
Really?
Melatonin is super protective. That is it's like one of the miracle hormones that's released when we sleep. So when we get tired, let's say it's like 10 o'clock, we're like, oh, you know, honey, I'm really tired, you know, or I'm really tired. It's because melatonin's boosting up and cortisol is going down. That melatonin is anti-cancer, right? That's what's basically cleaning up the body. It's giving signals in the body to clean out that cancer. So important, amongst everything. It's anti-inflammatory. It's wonderful. It's released from the pineal gland. Now, melatonin is, that's why people wear blue blockers, because once we have a little bit of that blue light at night, the melatonin starts reducing rapidly, right? So the importance of sleeping without the ambient light coming in and signaling to our eyes, right into our brain, to release melatonin, that's big, or to reduce melatonin, that's big. So we want to maximize our melatonin at night. There's a lot of data of breast cancer and utilizing melatonin in general. And deep sleep. You gotta sleep deep. You know, you gotta work. I have an Oura ring, and before it, I didn't know that I was up like an hour and a half every night, like rolling around. So I really had to work on a lot. But making sure you're having a full sleep with full cycles, deep sleep, REM sleep, that's super important for healing.
Well, you set up your room now. You have a blackout curtain too. We have a blackout curtain. I hear that you go to sleep with like an eye mask and some like earplugs.
Did Tyler tell you that?
Your girlfriend told me this.
Oh, okay.
She's like, because your girlfriend's a heavy sleeper, but you are not. Mm. So you have to set yourself up properly.
I do. And you know, some folks are like that. Like there's a huge spectrum. I'm sure both of you have met people who just like close their eyes and pass out. It's over. Nothing's waking them up. You can even poke them.
I'm so jealous of that.
Yeah, it's amazing. I would love that. But you have to find what works for you. For me, I need to wear an eye mask. For me, I do wear earplugs. For me, sometimes I have to put on even earphones if like there's stuff going on outside. Mm-hmm. But that's to ensure that I get a deep sleep.
You get that white noise machine.
Yeah. I have one. Oh, I have like crucial. A professional one, and it's nice. Loud. If I want to make it loud, I can have everyone around me here. Yeah, you just got to do what you have to do.
We got one that like from Amazon, and it has like a mini fan in it. So it sounds more like a fan.
Oh, yeah.
That one's nice. It's not too loud though. Sometimes I wish it was a little louder.
Yeah, no, it's definitely helped improve my sleep since we got it.
That's good.
But yeah, definitely get that blackout curtain. I mean, it's a game changer. You don't have to do the full installment. Just hang it up with a couple nails over
you could,
your current
if
stuff.
You, want. You know, yeah, like
if you don't want to redo your whole setup. I mean, it's pretty easy to stash away and then hang up whenever you need it. So
yeah,
it drastically changed my sleep.
100%. And you have to make sure, and this has been my thing, I'm trying to practice more as I preach it. My thing is going to sleep late. Like I go to sleep like 1 or 2, but it's really important to get to bed around 10, 11, right? 9, 10, 11.
I always say 10. That way you're actually asleep by 11 when that growth hormone spike comes
exactly.
in. You know?
Yeah. You want those cycles to begin early. You want really deep sleep by the time it's like 2 o'clock, you know? So, and it does make a difference. It does make a difference. I mean, again, get an Oura ring or something that could track your sleep, and you'll see the difference in sleep quality. That's been what I've been seeing also. So sleep, I cannot express, right, or understate how important proper sleep. If you're not sleeping right, then, you know, all this is for naught, right? You're rebuilding, you're cleaning up, you're detoxifying. Overall health is really beginning, and it's getting sexier now. We had Sean Stevenson come. Yeah. The Model Health Show, and he spoke about sleep. He said, sleep ain't sexy, but we need to talk about it. And it's true. So big thing, breast cancer is getting good sleep.
I mean, absolutely. I think that's because, you know, I really focus on exercise and diet. And then like the past year or so was really like my sleep. So improving that, but it is in a pretty good place now. So
what I really like about this is that you see the risk factors and all the lifestyle factors that are involved in this. And it's the same ones predominantly that are involved in cardiovascular disease. So you're talking about the two biggest causes of death in this country. And if you do a couple changes, and you don't have to do everything at once, incremental changes, you're making steps towards preventing two of the biggest risks that you have. So
yeah. And look, like we're talking about exercise, lifestyle, inflammation, diet, hormones, sleep. These are all things that are pillars of health, period. Mm-hmm. So we're not just at the end, it's not just about breast cancer, it's cardiovascular health, it's brain health, it's everything. We're just talking about basic interventions that we can make epigenetically to prevent breast cancer.
Well, what about, I mean, since we're talking about the sex-related cancers here, I mean, what about prostate cancer? Is there any common denominator between the two? I mean, I know there's a lot more. They put a lot more in terms of genetic predisposition and genetic factors on prostate cancer and less risk factors. But are they coming out with things such as like you know, like that diet, like we were talking about, or other lifestyle factors?
Yeah, very similar. It's very similar. Right now there's a lot of study on Mediterranean diet, mm-hmm. more whole foods, right? Whole grains, having a lot of plants. When I was in school, I did my preceptorship at NYU urology. So I worked under one of the best functional naturopathic urologists in the country.
Awesome.
So I've seen a lot of prostate cancer, mm-hmm. and it's literally, as I became an expert in breast cancer, pretty much the same thing. You have to focus on the hormones, because hormones are really driving prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. One thing that every prostate patient that I ever see, I get them off plastic immediately, right? Because of the effects, the xenoestrogen, the mm-hmm. outside estrogenic effects, right? Plastic will compete for estrogen. It'll mimic estrogen and stronger than it. So when that happens, that's causing our cells to replicate really fast. Unfortunately, you know, even BPA free is not free of BPA. It's just a tactic by the plastic industry. So I always tell people, use glass, use stainless steel. Mm-hmm. You guys have a Berkey. That's amazing. I see a lot of glass here. That's amazing. Fill it up. You know, that's an intervention that you and your family can make that will protect the husband from breast cancer, the husband from prostate cancer, the wife from breast cancer, the kids from any hormonal issues at a young age. It's like, it goes such a long way. That's one major thing that I talk about.
Do you think the rise in both of these cancers is due to the xenoestrogens and that being the rise in estrogen dominance being a huge factor?
I do. I think there's two. I think the rise in dairy, that a lot of people are eating a lot of cheese, mm-hmm. more cheese, tons of cheese. There's cheese in everything. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole nother conversation. But, you know, that has an estrogenic effect in our body. I mean, you can see it when a woman comes in. She has pimples all over her face, cystic acne. She's estrogen dominant, basically. Mm-hmm. Really bad periods, tender breast. You get them off dairy, and it's crazy to see how things flip clinically so fast. I think that's a major thing, and certainly the plastic.
Right.
I also think that there's been an increase in all of those xenoestrogens in personal care products. Mm-hmm. Right. Things like makeup, things like body wash, lotions, all of these things, perfumes.
Candles, yeah.
Candles, right? And we're breathing them in. Just because we're not eating it doesn't mean that we're not exposed. Mm-hmm. You know, you could put it on the skin, you could breathe it in. These xenoestrogens are all having an effect. So at the risk of making people worried, but also informing them, we just have to be sure, making slow changes to the things that are in our house, right? I love environmental medicine for that reason, because it's a huge piece of the pie that's missing in cancer care. Mm-hmm. And when I do test on people who have breast cancer, for example, we see these chemicals in their body that are really, really high, meaning that they were exposed to it recently or chronically. Mm-hmm. So, and that can be from cleaning supplies, stuff in their makeup, in their lotions, as I mentioned. But we can make that change, right? Like
right.
The environmental working group is a great resource, because you can cross-reference on the environmental working group. Which one was it? Skin Deep database. You can cross-reference everything you want.
Well, also they have that app, Think Dirty.
Think Dirty, that
one. And you can look up all the ingredients. And I think it also goes back to the whole concept of it's your total toxic load. Mm-hmm. So maybe not stressing about things here and there, but like mm-hmm. looking at what your total toxic load is. And maybe you're out traveling, like when I'm traveling, like it's still hard. Like I'll buy some cut fruit and plastic, but I'm so excited I can find right. anything healthy at that point.
Right.
But that's okay, because at home I use glass, like it's fine. You know, I try to use yeah. a reusable water bottle, but it's really the chronic use.
For sure, it's a chronic use. Like let's say you're cleaning every single day with really toxic cleaning supplies, then that's a big issue, right? Mm-hmm. But the same thing with me. Like I'll be at an airport, I'll drink from a plastic water bottle, yeah. right? I'll eat cut up fruits in plastic. I don't even think twice about that.
Right.
What I do think twice is when I'm going shopping, what I'm bringing into my home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most people who push back on this idea will say, oh, well, this single dose, you know, it's approved by the FDA. It's not any more than the natural estrogen occurring in your body. Mm-hmm. But like Amanda was talking about, like you were talking about, it's a lot more in terms of the accumulation of these toxins, not just the single doses you're getting, you know. And so, and not only that, but if you're already estrogen dominant, that small little dose mm-hmm. is puts you over the top and keeps you over the top. Whereas, you know, just the small incremental changes, you may not even feel it. You may not see effects short term, but you have to just at least accept the possibility that you're reducing your overall toxic load?
Yeah, I think with clinicians overall and scientists, we need to have better vision for the future, right? Mm-hmm. Because sometimes I'll put some stuff up and there'll be a lot of contrarians who get really angry and they go, it's the dose, you know, the dose in this is so low. Mm-hmm. But that's in a vacuum, and we don't live in a vacuum,
right?
We are exposed constantly. Our liver's working constantly. Our hormones are constantly being balanced and imbalanced. On top of that, you can have, let's say, a lotion where it has fragrance and that's one of the ingredients. That can mean 100 to 200 to 300 different chemicals in there. We don't know synergistically what all the chemicals do, all the combinations. So there's no way that you can possibly say that it's just a dose of that one chemical. What are you talking about? Instead, what we can do is empower ourselves and go, look, our liver is amazing. So how do we support more of it? Mm-hmm. Right? Exercise is amazing. How do we sweat? How do we start moving, right? To help detoxify. How do we poop every single day, right? To get it out, right? Like, we have the power to also make changes. And then how do we get better quality in our house? Mm-hmm. There you go. You know, you're already making huge, huge steps at prevention for all these stuff.
Oh, I think that's a beautiful thing. And so I guess I had another question on supplementation. Do you recommend any supplements when it comes to cancer? Mm. Or are you more like, sounds like obviously your food first, exercise, all of that. But are there any supplements that you recommend?
Yeah, well, when you have these practices in here, because I can't ensure that someone's going to be on supplements all their lives. What I can do is push for people to change their diet for their life, for a better diet. What I can do is ensure to tell people the power of what exercise does and putting that into their life. There are many supplements that have been evidence-based that have been shown to help folks who have breast cancer, going through breast cancer treatment or preventative. But I really think we should focus on how we can incorporate foods like cruciferous vegetables, right? There's supplements like DIM. It might not be for everyone, but something like DIM has the same effect of what cruciferous vegetables do. I mentioned melatonin for some people. Again, like, one, this is not medical advice, but there are some supplements out there. I mentioned magnesium for detoxifying, for mm-hmm. phase 2 detoxification of your hormones. So yeah, green tea, resveratrol, there's things that are out there, but I can't ensure someone's going to be on this all their lives. What I can ensure is, like, I can instill these things, teach them the importance of this every single day, and then they do that. That's more important for me, right? Making mm-hmm. these changes. And like stress, like handling your stress is huge. Mm-hmm. They showed women in isolation, what was it? 82% increase in mortality overall for women who had breast cancer and stay in isolation after it. Mm. 82% increase in dying if they don't have a network or sense of purpose or something. Why? Because we're social beings. When you're in that state, you're increasing cortisol and catecholamines, epinephrine, norepinephrine. So important, like, handling your stress is game changing, because stress is a huge driver of cancer too. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about all of these points, bullet points, but unfortunately oncologists don't sit with you and say, how's your lifestyle? How's your diet? How's your stress? What makeup are you using? You know, what are you putting in your body? I'm not here to overwhelm people, but I certainly am here to empower people to make these small changes that go a really long way.
So what about things that you would tell people that already have developed breast cancer? You know, because mm-hmm. obviously they talk about, you know, certain medications they have that block estrogen, like the estrogen mm-hmm. receptor blockers mm-hmm. and things like that. And then they also have aromatase blockers mm-hmm. and things like that. Do you agree with that? I think, like, the prescription one that we're talking about before is like tamoxifen or Finn. Do you like those, or is there more natural ways that you like to add as supplementary approaches?
Yeah. So I was trained integratively. So I worked in a hospital with oncologists, radiation oncologists, surgeons. We all worked as a team to maximize patients' outcomes, right? So in my job, I help people get through treatment. And certainly, like, the folks who did opt for naturopathic support did much, much better when they came through treatment, much better.
Is that because, sorry to cut you off, is that because they're doing the medical prescription drugs, but then also doing all of the...
Yeah, because unfortunately they have side effects, right? We know what happens with chemotherapy, mm-hmm. hair loss, neuropathy, weight loss, nausea. So we can help prevent or attenuate those, which was amazing. the part in my residency that I didn't have is a lot of the follow-up of after, mm-hmm. right? So I really did a lot of supporting them, and then they went. After I graduated, I was able to work deeper in finding out the root cause of the disease, right? So we spoke about a lot of things like how is their movement, how's their stress, how's their lifestyle, environmental toxins, what's their insulin status like, inflammation, sleep, diet. When it comes to tamoxifen, it's usually given long term, right? They basically block that estrogen, that carcinogenic form of estrogen. The problem is that the side effect to tamoxifen is more breast cancer, which is kind of crazy.
And it's actually like, I think like 1 in 2 per 100,000 also can develop uterine cancer.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think one, there needs to be a really good level of informed consent for these patients before they say yes to it. They have to know that they're at risk for breast cancer or uterine cancer. But also, I can never legally say, don't take this drug and do this instead. What I can do is say, let's take a dried urine Dutch test. Let's see how you're metabolizing estrogen. Let's see if we can reduce the way it's metabolizing away from the carcinogenic form into a more healthy form in a few months. If it's not, if we have issues doing it, if nothing's working, then maybe you can make an informed decision to go with that tamoxifen, mm-hmm. right? I think that would be a safer way, right? The interest of the patient long-term is the interest of every practitioner. For me, I think there's better options out there, and we can literally manipulate the way you're metabolizing estrogen through food and supplements, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, like the power of food and supplements, I've seen it. I've taken a test, I've given it to a woman with breast cancer, and then 3 months later, just going about it, completely is metabolizing estrogen differently, much safer. Wow. So it's doing the same job as tamoxifen, mm-hmm. but you know, cheaper, safer, healthier, you know? So I think that we need to just know that there's more options out there.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's a powerful answer. And do you know like what resources, like where can they find some more of these resources, or like where would you recommend finding a good doctor to help with this whole process?
Yeah. So for naturopathic doctors, you can find them on American Association of Naturopathic Physicians. That's naturopathic.org. But what you want is somebody who's trained integratively in oncology. And that's ONCANP. And through that database, you'll be able to find people who have done a residency or have seen X amount of a few thousand patients of cancer patients, or have a certain amount of hours. They take a test and then you're able to see a specialist, basically. So what you want is to check out the ONCANP database and you'll find someone near to you.
Okay, awesome. Cool. Whatever happened to your mom? Is she?
She died. She died before I knew any of this. I mean, it's pretty incredible. And that's sort of like a big driver for what I do, is because the power of all of this stuff we spoke about today preventatively can change the way people go with preventing cancer, when they have cancer or after cancer. All these recommendations are so powerful. So I didn't know any of it. All I knew was like kind of bro science at the time. You know, I was really into lifting. I was just eating like, you know, conventional chicken and rice and broccoli all day. Mm-hmm. But I didn't understand what the power of like cruciferous vegetables do. I didn't know that there was tests out there that we can see the way my mom was metabolizing estrogen. So she died in my first year of medical school, but it was a really important lesson that we can, like, one death can save thousands or millions.
Right. Sets you down this path of helping so many people.
Exactly. So I feel good doing that. I feel blessed to be doing it. And, look, my patients, knock on wood, have been cancer free. The longest one's been 3 years. I've been out of residency for 3 years. The longest one's been 3 years. And wow. She was stage 3, you know, knock on wood. So we can do that by just teaching people. You know?
That's crazy. I want to circle back really quick because one of the other things that I was doing research on and one of the other methods that people go through with the conventional medication is aromatase blockers. And mm-hmm. I know you talked about resveratrol before, mm-hmm. and that's kind of what resveratrol does on a very smaller level mm-hmm. than the prescription drug. It blocks your natural steroids from mm-hmm. being converted to estrogen. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So, I mean, we have to think about what's stimulating aromatase too, right? Those adipose cells, as we were talking about, that's where it's all happening, right? So the poor diet, really, obesity, right? Poor exercise, that's already things that are pushing that because it's liberating, it's creating more estrogen in the body. We have to, you can block it, right? With the aromatase inhibitors. And there are some natural ones that have similar effects, but you don't want to be on aromatase inhibitors all your life.
No.
Right? So we have to get to the root cause of how, what we can do. And literally it is losing weight. It is this is why weight loss is so important. Waist circumference is so important for men and women. Prostate cancer and breast cancer is because that's the aromatase enzyme is really, really active for these folks. Mm-hmm. And it's pushing, remember I talked about that pathway, it's pushing that four pathway and creating more and more of that carcinogenic form of estrogen or just estrogen dominance, which you don't want. Mm-hmm. So the disruption of hormones is coming from there. So again, I can't say don't take an aromatase inhibitor, but what I can say is like, we have to get to the root cause as to what is driving it first.
Right.
Right.
Instead of just putting the Band-Aid over it.
Of course.
Because then when you're taking the aromatase inhibitor, you also have to take another prescription to prevent muscle loss. Mm-hmm. Bone loss. Because you have like something like a 7 to 9% increase in bone fractures if you're taking that inhibitor. And so you have to take another Band-Aid on top of that. You know?
Unfortunately, with synthetic medicines, there will always be not a side effect. I call it an effect. They just can't market it, right? That's what happens. There's always something for, and it depends on the person's physiology. Some people will have the predisposition to bone breaking, but other people will have, I don't know, hair loss, nausea, something. There's always something. It's never foolproof. Mm-hmm. What I'm trying to submit to people is that we can do things that nature intended for us, get ourselves back in line with nature, and then create that change. I mean, it's so powerful. We just spoke about diet and exercise, 35% influence on breast cancer. Like 35, that's crazy. Put it in a pill, I'm a billionaire. You know?
Seriously. Well, no. I mean, they've even shown that even a 5% in a weight reduction for people that are significantly overweight can reduce your risk factor. And so just, I mean, think about that. If you're considering taking a medication that's going to, you know, be a Band-Aid, then you're gonna have to take another Band-Aid to fix that. Mm-hmm. Then just, you know, maybe take it short term. And in the meantime, lose 5% of your weight and just make that a yearly goal, you know, and then the next year you end up losing that 5% and keeping it off, not just losing it for the short term and then gaining it back, keeping it off. And then the next year you lose another 5%, have reasonable goals. And that way you can, if you are taking these medications, wean yourself off.
100%. Exactly. Like, that's what I'm trying to say. Like, you can do the medication, but get to the root cause, right? So it should be short term. I always say like, the best doctors are the ones who give you medication and then give you a plan at the same time to get off of it, not want you to be on it all your life. Mm-hmm. You know, unfortunately, a lot of these conventional doctors don't have the plan because they don't have the nutritional training or whatever it may be, or the other options. But that's where naturopathic doctors come in.
Right.
You know, like that's where functional doctors come in. We can come and help and fill those gaps and fill those voids.
Well, also, I mean, you know, if you have a doctor that's been practicing for 40 years, he's necessarily keeping up with all the standard, or at least the most recent literature on the subject, you know?
Yeah, we get comfortable, right? We get comfortable with what we do, which is, I told you, like I came here today with the newest research. So some of these statistics that I'm giving are newer 2019 research, you know, 2018. Nice. So because you have to keep up, I can't be coming on these podcasts saying the same things when there's something out there that one is contrary, or there's information that's more powerful. Like, oh, look, we found about artichokes, 3 a day does this, you know, but.
Wait, is that a thing?
No, well, yeah, artichokes for hormones, yeah. I didn't mention the power of mushrooms. Like, we should be eating mushrooms. You're talking about, you can grow mushrooms now. Mushrooms are actually really powerful anti-cancer, along with green tea, legumes, berries. Like, literally, think about everything nature gave us in the form of plants. I'm never telling people only eat this way, but I'm saying eat an abundance of plants. Eat some mushrooms, eat some nuts and seeds, you know, and get all of that variety in there, because your body knows what to do with it. Your body doesn't know what to do with like processed trans fats, the GMO pesticide laden foods, high sugar. Like, we don't know what to do with that, you know?
So what are some other things that maybe we didn't ask you that you wanted to cover today? And as far as the factors that we talked about?
No, like I just want to stress the importance of hormone balancing, the importance of pooping, right? Like there's those three phases, and you want to make sure your hormones are in balance and you're getting through phase one, getting through phase two, and pooping. Like, if there's anything that's a take home, it's like that is a driver of cancer, right? Breast cancer women, prostate cancer men, and everything in between. It's so important for us to understand what's affecting our hormones and how to reduce that. And then the power of diet and exercise. And I know that, like, you both are so active, and that's the biggest thing you're doing for yourselves is amazing stuff. I know how active you both are, and it makes me want to be even more vigorously active, right? Moderate activity
is good.
Well,
that's why you got a trainer, right?
I know.
You're bench pressing your girlfriend
I'm
now.
Bench pressing
I saw
my
that.
Girlfriend. Yeah, I'll have you know, he had me doing these ball slams today, and nice. then without a break doing shoulder press with these dumbbells. Mm-hmm. And I did it over and over for like 3 or 4 sets. I almost died. But that's vigorous exercise, right?
Yeah.
Like your heart is beating, you're sweating, your muscles are dead. We need that during the week. That mm-hmm. has actually been shown to be more powerful than, you know, moderate exercise is wonderful, but you want some vigorous. You got to be out of breath for a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I love that. No, I love ball slams. Just don't make the mistake I did at the gym and pick up what you think. I thought it was one of those balls that you know how you do a ball slam and it doesn't come back up?
Oh, it came up high.
It was not. It was a med. It was a bouncy. I don't know what
oh,
I was
like
thinking.
A bouncy med
it
ball.
It hit my lip. Like, it hurt so bad. I was like, this is not the good kind of stress.
Yeah, you want the one. Yeah, right.
I'm like, no one saw me, but my ego was definitely hurt. Like,
yeah.
I like felt like my lip was about
to
bleed.
Yeah, and find some time to take care of that stress. Like, you could have came home and meditated.
I know. Epsom salt bath. I treat myself to massages. Love a good massage.
Yeah. We all, one of the last take homes is finding your own time for yourself is very important. Your ritual time.
Yes.
And finding time to, like you said, you take the bath or massage or doing meditation or grounding on the beach has been shown to, one, help balance your cycle, your sleep cycle. Also reducing cortisol, reducing delayed onset muscle soreness. Like, grounding is amazing. So if you can take off your shoes and hit the earth, then do it, because there's power in that too. So making sure your stress is balanced is so important.
I mean, honestly, there are so many great takeaways from this podcast, and you know, just implement some of these slowly. Don't feel overwhelmed.
Yeah.
But if there was one area you would suggest our listeners to master first, what area would you say?
Getting an exercise regimen is one of the major
absolutely.
Ones.
Absolutely.
Boom.
Yeah.
There we go.
I swear, like, that's what I'm trying to say. If I can just give you the benefits of that, it would be life changing. So moving, sweating, just literally, if you can't do vigorous exercise, get up and go for a walk, but you know, go make it a little bit hard, go for a fast walk, you know, go to the beach, take off your shoes, go outside, take off your shoes, do some pull-ups, do something.
Yeah, it's okay to push yourself to the level of discomfort. You'll be all right, I promise.
It's healthy discomfort.
Yeah. Chris does it every day.
Yeah, I know.
I'll get there.
Yeah, well, it's along with sleep and diet, exercise is like so powerful. So powerful.
Beautiful.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. I had so much fun. We'll
go
ahead and drink some green tea together.
Yeah, yeah, or open up that wine.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's do that, the latter.
Only every now and then.
Yeah, only every now and then.
All right, thank you so much. We'll catch you guys on the next episode.
Thanks, Dr. G.
Thank you.
I hope you guys got some powerful takeaways from today's episode. I know I definitely did.
Absolutely. And if you want to check him out on Instagram, he's at dr.g_. That's at doctor spelled out .g_. And he actually has his own podcast too called Heal Thyself. Amanda was just featured on the podcast recently, and that's episode 35. So definitely go over there and check that out. And definitely take a look at our show notes, because we'll have a lot of those for you for this episode as well.
Thank you for tuning in today. We'll catch you on the next episode.
See you.